Did I get the point?
Yes.
Was that the point?
I mean, it's a little different, but yes, it was the point.
So we can start now.
Yes.
So this is the official start of the show.
The official start of the year in review here.
Sure. Welcome to a special holiday edition of The Accredited here on Guardian Radio 96.9, powered by 10th Year Seniors. I'm Ronaldo Dorset, and I feel like Junkanoo fandom should be fluid.
I'm Ricardo, and I'm still exhausted by what happened. I'm still confused. Given the fact that we have two Valley Boys now, why didn't either of them
should you just wait until we get to the actual show? Go, John.
I'm John Mark, and I don't know if I should consider Niall a winner or a loser since he was pacing for the Valley.
Right. I don't know why this is such an important hot topic for him. But anyway, here we go. So this is the accredited year end review. Wait, Carter, you have a job that you were supposed to do, which you're not going to be able to do.
I mean, I could do it. I don't remember all of them off the top of my head.
You don't remember any of them.
Unfortunately, this isn't a call-in day.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But the text line could be open. I think it's 477-GR96.
Yeah, we'll get back to you next Saturday.
You have all them people texting him for no reason. But anyway, so this is the final show of 2024, so we want to get into the top storylines of the sports year, or you could have some non-sports topics creeping their way in there like we already alluded to in the opener. So here's how we're going to do this. We have a list of the top five storylines that we feel were the most impactful in the Bahamian sports world, and then we also, each one of us is going to have one outside looking in. So three OLIs, five main topics. We're going to split it somehow to fit into this format within an hour, because with these we can go on for like 2 hours. But here we go. We'll start with our outside looking in, so one that quite didn't make the top five. I'm going to let John start us off. John's going to hit lead off today. RIP Ricky Henderson.
RIP to a legend. So I should talk to myself about myself in the third person.
You can. You should say, here's John Mark's outside looking in.
Here's my outside. Here's John Mark's outside looking in. The outside looking in for me has to be the World Athletic World Relays coming back to the Bahamas. Even though that didn't crack the top five, because I feel like there are way more important stories, it just shows the resilience of the Bahamian people to be able to get a stadium done in time.
I feel like he set it up so perfectly to get to that. It looks like it could be ready, so I can't doubt him anymore. I was skeptical for a long time.
Exactly. Shout out to the Bahamas Bowl. No, but it was just, you know, you have your main athletes here. Stevie Gardner and Sharnay Miller-Weibo are going to be the mainstays of our top of the top athletes to be able to get us to qualify for the Paris Olympics. It was a controversy going on because of
always
controversy where Shania Adderley was able to come in and help get a national record, and that was advocates always going to be, should have been the faster one, should have been her who helped with the process.
What a year for her, right?
Yeah, no, it's...
You forget the Olympic controversy started right there.
She's going to Liberty, right? Guess who's coming into town? The Liberty Flames, Bahamas Bowl.
There's always a through line to the Bahamas Bowl for us, for some reason.
For some strange reason. No, but it's something where, you know, you get in the circles and you talk about it, and did she belong to be on the team? Personally, I feel like, yes, she did. But also, I understand the time thing, because with basketball, and we'll get into that a little later, because that's on our list. But she helped the Bahamas get a national record. There's been no other quartet in the Bahamas to run that fast. Right. So for people saying, you go with the fastest person, I agree. But also, I'm a loyalty type person where I feel that she was able to get us there. And you should reward people who help you get. Even though you're not going to win the Olympics, I don't think we had a chance of winning the Olympics, even with our full strength team. You got to give that reward sometimes, because making the Olympics sometimes is that step to help the future.
And that kind of proved the only thing that Bahamians love more than track and field is arguing about things. And the World Relays gave them everything that they needed.
I guarantee you, we will go to not every Olympic.
Of course. Olympics. Anytime. Cardo, outside looking in. Actually, you know what? Let me go before you go.
I mean, I can do a quick...
I'm gonna go next. Okay. So my OLI is going to be Karifta Swimming, winning their, what seems like, their 117th meet in a row.
800 million.
So huge for Bahamas Aquatics. But no, in the same vein of us rushing to get the track ready for the World Relays, same thing happened with Karifta Swimming. Mm. I feel like it was up until, what, a day or two before the pool was actually filled.
It was completed.
Yeah.
Resilience.
Hey, resilience. We got it done in the 11th hour. And this this Bahamas Aquatics program, which has been dominant over the last 6 years. I'm going to even stretch it back to 7 years before they to the meet before they actually won one. So I think that's.
But it's a process. You should say 10 years because yeah, really. it took a process to build where they are. Like, you just don't magically start winning six in a row. You have to build a foundation.
You know who you get to send a shout out to? Shout out to Karifta Swimming for actually separating the French colonies countries. So now, instead of them just having one team, no, now you got to split up and you got to swim for your own country. And ever since, we've been killing it.
Yeah.
Cotto, you're outside looking in.
It's my turn.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, in the words of Sean Jay-Z, Cotto, nobody wins when family feuds.
Yeah.
And it's been a traumatic year for everybody in the Junkanoo circle.
Not for everybody.
Well, except the Saxons, because they did. I drove in, there was somebody doing an interview for them talking about the win this past week. And the tone he took was next level. He basically declaring that we could just run it up until they make up their mind.
So they're going to do Karifta Swimming?
Basically.
Pretty much.
Basically, what? I think right now they're sitting on three straight, and if they win on New Year's Day, it's going to be four straight.
If it's cute.
Anyway.
So they're doing what Patrick Mahomes wants to do.
Definitely.
Pretty much.
Definitely.
Same flex.
But it's been turmoil. This is the first, well, not the first, but one of the biggest Junkanoo matters to ever make it to legal proceedings. I think everyone.
Old timer softball made just, legal proceedings.
I was about to say, they got some catching up to do to get to old timer softball.
Boy. But no, everybody is hoping for resolution somewhere along the line.
Not everybody.
Again, except the Saxons. I think even one family is trying to figure out if y'all can make this make sense, because everybody understand how important the Valley Boys is to the overall Junkanoo concept. So I to put it in short words, I don't think they're capable of winning a parade individually, the Way Forward or the World Famous. So hopefully sometime in the coming year, they can find a way to bring it back together. And
I feel like we're going to dive into this a little later on in the second half.
Do we have a soundboard for when we announce each one of our top fives? I feel like we should have some triumphant. Can we fix it in post? Okay, don't worry about it. All right, so now let's get to our top five. These are our top five storylines. These are the most important storylines to Bahamian sports for the year 2024. Let's get started at number five, and we call this the leaders of the new school. So in two of our most popular sports, two of our fastest rising stars, you got Sebastian Walcott in baseball, Vijay Edgecombe in basketball. These are two superstars. We are hearing their names a lot. We heard it a lot in 2024, but that is just the tip of the iceberg. Vijay Edgecombe set to be a lottery pick within the next few months if all goes well. Sebastian Walcott became the youngest Bahamian player ever to advance to the AA level in baseball, and at just, 18, 19 years old, sky's the limit. The Rangers expect him to break through to the majors in very short order, and very important to note, he's a Scott Boras client, so we know what that means.
Scott Boras.
Show me the money, Jerry Maguire Jr.
Yeah. So what do we think about these two guys in the year that they have had? Let's start with you, Cotto.
No, from my standpoint, it's all VJ. Predominantly speaking, the concept of what basketball means to the growth and development of the Bahamas from a youth perspective is huge, because this is, I treat it like a gateway into opportunity. And I think as we watch these things develop and go on, we look at people like VJ and say, hey, there's hope for more persons to follow that pipeline. He's from the small island of Bimini, found a way to get into a showcase, and from there took off for him. So we look at that and say, hey, if we have more opportunities like that, the sky's the limit for youth coming up in the Bahamas.
I mean, I actually had the opportunity to go watch Sebastian Arizona in the spring training game, which to me is a milestone in its own, especially at that age, because you're with all the big leaguers. It's right. Not like you're on the team. You're treated like a big leader. I know theoretically, maybe in the clubhouse, it's a little different. You got to do the rookie duties or whatever. But when you come on the field, you're treated as if you should be there. Like, they're not making any excuses. They want to see you. They want to see you produce. So being able to see that in person was great. I know that luckily he got in when I was there, because the only thing I said is, man, if I drove all the way up here and he didn't play, it would have been kind of upsetting. But then the coaching staff put him in. He had a couple, should have had the game winning run. I feel like if he would have slid a little sooner, he would have got in. But it's just crazy being able to see Sebastian. Like, I didn't see Sebastian. Like, I saw VJ, who personally I felt he was going to be great. That's very well documented. But it's just seeing the youth come up and be able to do what they do. Like I said, I'm not in the baseball world like Niall's in the baseball world, so I really didn't see Sabas come up. And then I honestly can't evaluate baseball. Like, I feel like I could evaluate right. basketball to a point. And it's just, but being able to see them pretty much at the highest point in their careers that they could be, it's just something special, and you just hope that it could turn over so more people will start supporting them when they're younger, as opposed to when they're all over ESPN, when they're all over news, U.S. News media outlets. We got to treat our own here like we are the ESPN, and we are promoting them.
Yeah, that's exactly what it should be. And I feel like these two names in particular are so special because the way the development and the feeder system is for their sports is a completely different process, right? Like, in America, college basketball, you become a star right away. So once you get drafted or once you're a top pick, we expect to see...
Once you're a five-star.
Yeah, we expect to see VJ on TV the next year in the NBA. And that's the way it turns out. We saw it happen with DA. We saw it happen with Buddy. You're a big star in college. We get a chance to watch you all the time. We're going to watch you in the NBA. Mm. With baseball, completely different. You have signing day, but you're not in the in the majors for the next few years. Best case scenario, they actually plan for you to get there 7 years down the line. So it's almost as if a lot of what Walcott has to do is done in the shadows, where if people are not connected to the baseball world, you don't know how important the things that he's doing, how important it is. But with VJ, it's in front of your face. I'm on SportsCenter every night dunking on somebody.
Yeah, because that's what's sexy. Duncan is sexy, whereas a base hit, a steal, people don't look at that as like, oh, home runs, sexy.
Got to be like Shohei.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But I mean, they are both poised for superstardom in their respective fields. And what's interesting about this is how the development happened. And that's something you could always get to with these two different ones, right? So you have VJ who, in team sports in the Bahamas, this is the way it's done. You got to leave early. You got, for basketball, leave early, get in the American system, get as much reps as you can against high-level competition, and that's the way it happens.
And he lucked out because he left before COVID.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where if you got stuck here during the COVID times, you lose 2 years of your basketball career just off the rip.
And for Sabas, a part of International Elite Sports Academy, able to train here at home for the most part, but still doing the same thing that baseball players do. I mean, that basketball players do, because baseball players have to leave, play against that competition, be seen, and then you're able to sign that contract. But there still feels like so much more we can do on our end in terms of development to make sure these stories are not anomalies, but are more of the norm.
And shout out to Donnie Freeman, too. Let's not forget about that other young, talented player who is on draft boards as well. People may not have known about him, but hey, he's going to be another one as well to keep an eye out on.
Oh, my bad. I
thought we were trying to speed run through it, though. Yeah.
No, we're not speeding. We got time. We are absolutely not speeding. We got a whole lot of time that we can get through this. We have time to elaborate on our ideas. I was kind of, you know.
No, saying, that's fair. That's
he was
fair.
Looking for someone to put the transition to. So Sebastian Walcott was in the shadows of the realm. But then some people make it big from the first signing class that we had, a.k.a. Jazz Chisholm.
That was a great transition. John really had a great transition.
I feel like he had that plot.
He nailed it. But no, he is expected to be the next one. Like, right now, everything in terms of the Bahamas and baseball related is Jazz Chisholm. But I feel like we've been saying this and we've been putting it out there as much as possible. No, you need to pay attention to this next one. You can do two things at once. You can walk and chew gum at the same time, because for as good as Jazz is, and he's an incredible all-star player, Sebastian Walcott
projected to be better than him.
Turns into everything that he's projected to be. This is the one.
But that's what you want. You want, and this is one thing I respect about Buddy. Buddy wants people to be better than him.
Right.
Like, he knows he's in the NBA. So you have players, and I know Jazz probably wants players to be better than him as well, just because of the brand, but Jazz won't admit it, because Jazz is a great player in his own aspect. Like, let's just be real, but you want players to be able to say, oh, no, yeah, the next one coming up is better than me. But no, and you put yourself at that pedestal where you are an all-star.
I just feel like it's that for a lot of people coming from countries as small as we are, because you have this whole situation where you want everybody to buy into hype and understand that there's not only more like you, but there's more creative, more dominant, more prolific people coming along this pipeline. So if you look at what started back when we had the whole push to the World Baseball Classic for the Great Britain team, all of that energy started from that point on, because then you have players starting like, yeah, we're playing for Great Britain now, but eventually we're going to have the opportunity to put on that Bahamian flag, put on that Bahamian jersey, and represent our country, because we have really great players coming up.
Speaking of representing the country, that is a great segue, because at number four on our list, it's got to be Bahamians in New York. We had an incredible run in New York over the last few months in MLB, of course, in the WNBA. So everything that happened in
New York... I really thought you was going to talk about the Cass Christmas Eve concert.
Oh,
because when you said Bahamians to New York, I felt like the whole Caribbean. Anyway, we can talk about that later. Keep going.
We can talk about it now. Please elaborate.
No, it's just, it's
well, like, they had a concert and they took over Brooklyn. Like after they like had, a, they, was had wild. They had a fete in 20-degree weather.
Who had a concert?
Cass.
Oh.
So when you said it, I was like, Bahamians was at the concert too. Yeah.
But that's a Caribbean thing. Like when and this is one thing that I love about our culture. So for example, jazz. You know that you have, and I always tell people, it's 30 million. Like, we may be an island of 400,000, but you put someone on a pedestal from the Caribbean, like how we cheer in the Olympics. It's your country, your region, anybody else, then USA.
So let's give the people quickly a rundown of everything that happened in New York, because this was like the first Avengers for us. So you had Jonquel and the New York Liberty winning the first WNBA title in franchise history. JJ winning finals MVP, of course. You had Jazz getting traded to the Yankees, probably the most well-known sports franchise there is, making a run at the World Series, making history, and nearly becoming the second Bahamian to win a World Series title. But their run towards it, you know what it's like in October when
it's. And let's not forget about Anton and the Mets.
Yeah, so Anton Richardson.
He was going to get there, I mean.
Yeah, that's on the list. Anton Richardson becoming the first Bahamian to coach during the MLB. Well, this is his second time getting into the MLB playoffs, but him making the move to the Mets in the offseason, and you saw the run that the Mets had. They'll probably have another one after adding Juan Soto. And one that we forget happened in New York as well was when Devin first broke the hurdles record, and that came at the Millrose Games in March, I want to say, or perhaps earlier. But anyway.
So what you're saying is the same way how we own Argentina.
We've been owning New York. It's been a lot of great things happening for Bahamians emerging out of New York. I want to get the favorites from each one of you guys during that stretch, because there's a lot. That's four major ones right there. We could even go further into it, because VJ won Gatorade Player of the Year for New York for the second consecutive year, but he already had a segment. But now, what's the favorite for you guys?
For me, it would always be Jonquel, because she's been so close to it so many times.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen her develop. You've seen her get I don't want to call it the bad pushback locally. She's been through so much.
No, that's what it was, Okada. Like, we don't have to shield them from it.
Fair. But she's been through so much, and for somebody that's worked as hard as her to not only put that sport on the map, because when you think about women's basketball, they have had years and years of just dull play since the Lisa Leslie days back in the day. Now for them to come all the way back up here, and you have somebody like JJ being a forebearer, I think she's a 2-time MVP, if I'm not mistaken. No. Season MVP?
She's just one time.
One time, okay.
I mean, one time's a lot.
But still, now to come all the way back to win a championship in the biggest basketball market out there, especially when you look at the WNBA, it's a big deal.
I mean, I agree with Cardo, but you could all, like I said, everything Cardo said is on point. I just know following JJ her entire career when she was in Connecticut, knowing she was the person on the team, taking teams to championships, just falling short every time. For her to finally get that, that's just such a big deal. But also, you got to think of Devin. Devin has had injuries. Devin came back from an injury that no one thought, oh, she's never going to get back to full recovery, all that stuff. And then she goes and she breaks the world record. And what was the worst part was she broke the world record. I mean, worst part for how you say it. She broke world record. Then someone tied it the next day. You know, so it was like, oh, she got the world record. But then she came out, and then she broke the world record again, and she smashes the world record. Because you remember, tenths of a second hundredth of a second, still a big deal in track and field. So for her to be able to come back from all the downs that she's had, to be able to come and get a world record, because a world record ain't no easy feat. That was, what, a 21-year-old world record? Mm-hmm. Somewhere around there. So let's hope that this stands for another 10, 15 years, but still, I still feel because she has that world record in her name, because, you know, it's eventually will get beaten. We don't know when, but people are getting bigger, faster, stronger. Training's getting better. Tech science is getting better with shoes and the track. Everything just gets faster. But for her to be able to have that world record on her resume,
yeah,
that's just a huge, huge deal.
And for me, the biggest aspect, I'm going to take this one. I got to take the MLB guys. So I'll start with Antoine. So for him, I think, and a lot of young kids, their baseball dream obviously is to play it. I think no matter what sport it is that you grow up playing, the dream is to play that professionally. I think guys like Antoine Richardson, guys like Ethan Bain in the front office with the Chicago White Sox opens up an entirely different new door to a whole lot of youth, because your baseball career can be, if you're lucky enough to make it to the majors and all things break right, maybe 10, 12, 15 years. Well, as a first base coach and working himself up into the front office, who knows how long Antoine's career could be in that respect. Mm. So the business of baseball is something that's going to be very crucial and very important for, I think, a whole lot of the younger generation to realize that they have access to that. And Antoine's the forebearer for that. On the field, everything that Jazz went through as a Marlin, the rocky breakup in the
needed breakup
in the clubhouse. Yeah, needed on both sides, by the way. The Marlins always a franchise that's reeling. Jazz is pretty much just playing out the string, and you wondered where he would go. And I remember during the process where you know he was going to get moved, because the Marlins were shopping everybody, and it seemed like there were a whole lot of negative reports being put out there about
him, yeah,
saying he's what kind of teammate he is. And none of this was actually coming from people in the clubhouse. And I remember reading those thinking someone is trying to taint his trade value. So he goes to the Yankees and everyone is saying how he's not going to fit in with this. When you think of the Yankees, you think structure. You famously know that you can't have facial hair. You can't do this. You can't do that. Everything. You don't even have names on the back of your jersey because everything is bigger than you. It's about the pinstripes. Well, Jazz goes there and absolutely fits in and becomes exactly what that franchise needed in that moment. Beloved in the clubhouse, beloved by the fans, and on the field had probably one of the greatest starts you could possibly have. And I feel like that start was so good, he was able to ride out the waves of the obvious ebbs and flows that these things go, because when he went in the slump, he had built up so much capital already that he was okay to withstand that. And I just thought him going there with the biggest spotlight on him, knowing how he is, he was able to get out of that relatively unscathed and had the best season of his career.
And we know it's the Yankees, but you know who loves that? New Yorkers.
Yeah.
New Yorkers love that. Like, New Yorkers love that he's wearing these kicks and he's dressing up a certain way and he's not scared. This is one thing about Jazz. The old school mentality of baseball is outdated, prehistoric, makes no sense. Oh, these are the unwritten rules of baseball. I love how the new generation is just like, yo, I'm playing a kid's game, making money, and I want to have fun.
Yeah.
We want to make baseball fun. Like I said, people looked at baseball and be like, oh, baseball is boring because it's too long. But now baseball has these, like, even Ohtani, like, even though he's silent, he's on the field doing what he has to do. Japanese people are so respectful. It's insane. But it's like,
they love honor so much.
Right? Boy, they love it so much. But it's like, you have people like him. Then you have Acuna, who is out there. Jazz, who speaks his mind and doesn't care because he knows he belongs. That's That's the biggest thing. These old school baseball people, they got to realize the new school's here, and you got to respect the way that they're going to transition the game to the masses.
Right. And that's what it's about. It's about mass appeal, because you hear this all the time. Baseball's top fans are dying out, are a dying breed. But the way younger players now present the game, Bryce Harper was the forebearer of this a few years ago when I remember he was wearing all the shirts and the merch saying, let the kids play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, putting all these stories into perspective and putting them in the right context, you quickly realize, for the Bahamian Stars in New York, this has been a year about resilience, overcoming a lot of obstacles, finding your way back in the case of Devin, and trying to bring it back to the idea that we can not only survive that, we can go on and be successful in both of, well, in all of our individual sports.
We finish the countdown when we return. For now, we head into the half.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Accredited, powered by 10th Year Seniors here on Guardian Radio 96.9. And we are doing our year-end review. Is it year-end or year-in?
Year-end.
Year-end review. Year-end. I feel like some people say year-in.
They might.
Behemoth do.
Whatever you wish it to be, it is something that we're just highlighting what happened throughout the year.
I'm Ronaldo, and I don't know if it's year-end or year-in.
I'm Ricardo, and I'm very, very confident that it's end.
I'm John Mark, and the next topic is my specialty.
Okay. So, as you were listening before the break, you heard us give our LOIs. We started our top five countdown of the top Bahamian sports storylines of the year. Let's to recap that quickly. Number five, leaders of the new school, Vijay Edgecombe and Sebastian Wolcott's rise to superstardom. At number four, we had Bahamians in New York, which I'm certain we're going to get to later. And we continue the countdown here at number three, our senior men's national basketball team and their run at almost Olympic qualification.
Nah, I still call it their run of history. The entire process was historic. It for us, it was probably the biggest. It's the biggest basketball story I've ever seen in my lifetime, from a local standpoint. I wasn't around during the Michael Thompson years, but from a basketball standpoint, it's the most in tune that I've ever seen the entire culture in one moment, just all coming together.
You know why this was bigger than all of them? And we've seen all of those guys that you named, we saw them succeed individually, but we saw Michael Thompson do that in a Laker jersey. We've seen Buddy do it in multiple different NBA jerseys. This was the first time for basketball that people got to drape themselves in the flag and have that nationalism that you experienced during the Olympics. And we just pulling for country first. We don't normally get that at this level. And they were setting history at every single point. It was the greatest collection of Bahamian basketball talent we've ever seen assembled.
On and off the court.
I never thought I would hear that phrase. Like, that's crazy when you say it like that. Yeah, never thought I would hear that phrase. The greatest collection of Bahamian basketball as well.
The crazy thing is, it can be better.
Yeah.
Like,
we haven't even maxed out.
Yeah, that's the thing. It can be better. But, you know, I already alluded to, I'm an expert on this topic. What people have to realize is the beginning. The beginning of this wasn't just the, hey, we got all these players.
No.
We're at this level. We're going to qualify for the Olympics. Right. It was the level of being there in 2018 when we started the World Cup, when FIBA changed the system to try to have a World Cup to make sense. And the Bahamas and USVI, the two like English-speaking Caribbean countries, were the only ones in there. And we're making ways and making ways. That year, we didn't qualify the second round, so you had to go back to pre-qualify. So it's like you go into these little tournaments before you can hit the big stuff. And for me, 2019, when Buddy played, when we played USVI and we played Dominican Republic, that changed the whole culture of, hey, our best player committed to the program.
Yeah.
That's what people don't realize. Buddy was the first one. I know Aiden played when he was 17 in Central Basket, and I feel like that also helped with him playing, you know, now because he's already done it.
Yeah.
But he played in Central Basket before while he was in college. But it's now you see, when you're in college and you're in high school, it's different to play than when you're in the NBA. Mm. You have a lot more to lose when you're in the NBA. So for him to come and say, you know what, I'm putting everything aside, I'm coming to play. We're gonna make this run. We're gonna make sure Team Bahamas is there. And then we beat Dominican Republic in Dominican Republic. And if you talk to Buddy, that'll be one of his most fun games that he's played in because the crowd was there. It's just a different level of atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
right? So all of a sudden, you're going through the process. We're going to these qualified tournaments. And then what people don't realize is FIBA looked at their qualification process to the Olympics and said, hey, we need to change something where we need to give the smaller countries a chance to be able to just have a real shot at making the Olympics. Because if you didn't make the World Cup, usually, you're completely out. So they made this pre-Olympic qualifier where we went to Argentina, and then that's where DeAndre committed to play. That's where Eric came out and said, I want to play for the Bahamas. We need to do what we have to do to get me to play. Yeah. And that is, to me, you have those steps, and then you have everyone committing 2 years ago.
So those names John mentioned, of course, Buddy, DeAndre, and Eric Gordon led the Bahamas to a runner-up finish at the final FIBA Olympic qualifying tournament that happened in Valencia, Spain. So they improved the Bahamas' ranking to number 52, and on that run, we beat number 20 Finland, number 17 Poland, and number 29, Lebanon. So three ranked countries, and I think this was our first time beating European teams.
Yeah, it was the first time. So when we went, and this is what I tell people, it is insane to think about that we were invited to an international friendly in Greece to play Montenegro and Giannis them. Like, no, you just gotta be real with it. Like, we're invited to a tournament. They knew the team we put out there wasn't going to be the team because, you know, everyone's just, you know, just getting the
you're
flow.
You're holding your cards close exactly. to the vest. Exactly. You're not going to go in those friendlies and play DA and play Buddy yeah. big minutes or play Eric Gordon big minutes.
Exactly, because you're waiting for the big
real
show.
Tournament, yeah.
So what happens with the ranking system is we're ranked so low because we have to qualify for X tournaments to be able to get the ranking to go up. Like, we need to go to the AmeriCup. The AmeriCup is worth more points than it's just – it's a long thing. But when we got there, when we got to Spain, it wasn't the Bahamas doesn't belong. It's like, that's the team we have to watch out for. Yeah. Like, between the other teams. Like, the respect inside the basketball circles was, no. Bahamas isn't coming here to just participate or whatever. The Bahamas has a chance to win. Even the people in Spain, we were their biggest worry.
And look, when you think of Spanish basketball, we all remember watching the USA struggle to beat Spain in one of, I think, probably Shut one of the greatest song. Olympic moments. Yeah, we watched Kobe had to take over and struggle to beat Spain. So when you think of it on that level, we were neck and neck with them. We were 8 points away from beating them to get to the Olympics.
In
we
their
were,
home country.
We were 1'6'11 athletic NBA talent, small,
Shoot,
I mean,
foot,
power forward.
6 foot
away
seven
from
power forward, too.
Getting to the Olympics. Like, if we had that, if only we had another NBA talent that stands 6'11 and is uber athletic, maybe we would be in the Olympics and this turns into an entirely different story.
I like the fact that you left Acta off of that because Mons Cruz is also, I can't call him by his real name, but he's also
Acta. I wasn't even meaning him.
No, but we alluded to it earlier. We've never had our best team put together yet.
Yeah.
And I keep saying yet because the day that it does happen, it's, and, okay, you know, sports is funny. We will compete with the top of the top in the world. USA is going to, USA, Canada, Slovenia, maybe Germany. Those are countries that are, like, a stranglehold right now for, like, they're top, the top four, in my opinion. Yeah. They're the top
that's,
four in the world.
No, that's what it is.
Yeah. Everyone else, if we have a full squad, we could beat, we could beat anyone in the world. Let's just put it that
I feel
way.
Like, I was about to say, we, I feel like no, at no. full strength, yeah. we run with Germany.
Yeah, we could beat anyone in the world at full strength. But then you got to see.
In the USA.
Yeah, you got to see up to top five. Once we have our team together, even the same team we had in Spain, we'll compete and we might beat, you know, it'll be a 50-50 chance.
So for the uninitiated, how far are we away from that team that you keep referring to being
we're not that far away.
One it's, or two players away. It's right there.
But see, it's less. It's 1 or 2 years away. Because right now we're in the AmeriCup cycle. So we got to see if we can make AmeriCup. If we don't make AmeriCup, that doesn't stop the Olympic. Like, what we're playing right now doesn't, and this is what Behemoth's got to understand. The process is when the World Cup cycle comes, that's when the process starts over to qualify for the world for the Olympics. So I feel we're going to be having our strongest teams ever. And even in the non-summer windows where we have the NBA players, to be able to qualify, you got to be top seven in the region.
Right.
I think with the Dayton Aubrey's coming up, you got Franco, he's out of school. Garvin's out of school. Sammy's out of school. Amart Harvey, Nathaniel Bastion's playing well. You have these young players that you're going to be able to plug in. Dominic Bridgewater, I could go on. You have these young players you could plug in to be able to help get you to this World Cup. And you remember, all these rankings that these teams have, when you make the World Cup, you jump up 20, 30 rankings off the bat. Like, that's what it is. We make the World Cup, we're a top 20 team in the world.
And with the talent we have, I think that is where we actually belong
just
to
be.
Just
from a fanatic standpoint, I have to ask. When the Federation can make the Bahamas jersey available for sale? Because I know some people that need one.
That's a good question. It would be a great, it would be a great revenue generator,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I agree.
Like, yeah. Need them a number seven or something like,
because you can buy USA basketball merch anywhere. Yeah. I've seen people wear it. It only makes
make
sense,
it,
right?
Make it happen. Talk down to make it happen.
All right. Talk to somebody. Talk to some people here.
Wait, is it Anto or Puma?
Anto.
Anto.
Talk down to make it happen.
Let's move on to number two. We alluded to it early in the Bahamians in New York, but of course we got to get more in-depth into it because it was such a historic achievement. Number two on our list, delayed, not denied. This was the phrase said by Jonquil Jones when she got her MVP award following the WNBA Finals. And just to recap her year, I called it the perfect ending to a season. She's already a Hall of Famer. We know that much. She already has so many things on the list of firsts for a Bahamian basketball player. And we always call her, and it's easy, not even a hot take, but the most accomplished Bahamian basketball player in history. There's nobody else whose resume comes even remotely close. We said earlier, just the second season in New York leads New York to their first WNBA title. And with all of the star power in that city, it was Jonquil that was the engine that made this team go. One finals MVP, averaging 17.8 points and 7.8 rebounds per game in the finals. It was her star-making moment. And even with Breonna Stewart, even with Sabrina Ionescu, it was the JJ show. And she got the MVP trophy for it.
No, facts. I think that's always the thing a lot of people leave out of that conversation. For her, when she was brought in from Connecticut, she was not meant to be...
She was meant to be Chris Bosh.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But she was the person that they lean on going down the playoff stretch because they know the tenure that she had. They know that the elk that she had. She had talent that really put them over the edge. So you had a lot of players that leaned on her during that playoff run.
I mean, my favorite thing is she was just so consistent. Like, throughout, you knew what you were getting out of JJ throughout the entire season. You know what you're going to... It's just... I was so happy. Now we could talk about all the voice notes that I sent about how passionate I got during these games.
To protect you, we're not going to talk about those voice notes but ever again.
For me, the whole thing was I wanted it so bad for JJ, like for her to win it, because I've seen her get there. I've gone to a WNBA finals and I've seen her take it to a game five and not be able to close it out. I've seen her have the best team in the WNBA and not be able to close it out. Like, that's how basketball works. So for her to, and not just for her to get the award, I feel like for the people who voted for the award to recognize
how important
she was, even though she didn't have the fancy, 30 points a game or the double-double, they could see that she was the catalyst of why they won.
You know what a big part of it is? Well, yes, offensively, they always worked better when they ran through her. She didn't always have to be the one taking the shot, but when she was the one making the decisions, things worked better. We saw how much Breonna Stewart had some games where she struggled down the stretch. Same thing with Sabrina Ionescu. But like you said, JJ was the most consistent. And then on the defensive end, she was matched up against probably another MVP candidate in Nafisa Collier. And she had to do so much.
Or if Minnesota wins, she would have won.
And so JJ had to do more on both ends of the floor than anyone else had to do. So for her to have that moment in a season where she was also obviously an all-star again, named to the All-WNBA second team and the All-Defensive second team. So... all the accolades.
I don't understand the latter, though. I don't understand the defensive second team.
Well, they owe her a defensive player of the year. I don't know when she can get that one, but they owe her one.
She needs to get that so she could have all the awards from the WNBA. And they stole the All-Star Game MVP from her that one year.
And then she came home.
Yep.
She got a mural, though. Hey?
She did get a mural.
I drive around and wrong about look at it often.
Yeah, I always see it up there. I wonder, like, if it's the actual outdoor paint they use, because it's been raining a lot lately. I hope it doesn't.
It is. It looks going to be up there a while.
Yeah.
It still looks
I didn't understand why they didn't do the whole side of the building, but that's a separate conversation.
Well, maybe they were waiting for someone else to win a championship this year.
That would have been it. That would have been it.
To use it. You can't just use all the space.
That's true.
But, no, it's JJ came home. I feel like Freeport would have been more of her... happiness, because that's home. Yeah. Like, that's what people got to realize. Like,
but they ruined all of the happiness, John.
I understand
they ruined
that
all the happiness with the stupidity, nonsense.
With stupidity. But I still feel that that's what people got to realize. Like, Nassau wasn't going to be as celebratory as Freeport was going to be
because they watched her grow.
Exactly, they watched her grow. They seen her play. They seen her at St. George's gym playing.
So, kind of what happens with all Bahamian athletes, right? And we give them to the world. The world loves them. But the place where you are from, like, we can all love watching Buddy play. It's not going to be the same as people from 8 Mile Rock. It's just not going to be.
That's just
going
to be like Bimini with VJ.
I was going to say, same thing with Bimini and VJ. We will all have a sense of pride. Yeah, VJ, but it'll be different people from Bimini. People from Moores Island, people from Abaco in general, when Stevie runs, that's a different feeling for them than it is. So, yeah, people in Grand Bahama, especially if you're from Holmes's Rock, a small, even within the confines of Grand Bahama, this one small community, yeah, they're going to treat this completely different because they get to say, we remember when she was this and when she was that. And yeah, she used to be on the court with the boys and was on par and better than them. And now look, we saw all of that play out on the biggest basketball
stage. What's the daddy say? Can you beat her on one-on-one? Yeah. I mean, the answer to that is a lot of Bahamians can't.
No.
Let's just be real.
So we move on to number one, and when you do something as significant as a world record, that has to be the story of the year, because it means you are the best ever at exactly what you did. We mentioned Devin Charlton earlier setting the world record in the 60-meter hurdles, 7.65 seconds in March at the World Indoor...
in Glasgow.
Yeah, 7.65 seconds she set in Glasgow, 60-meter hurdles world record holder, and... like John said earlier, they've been going back and forth because the sprint hurdle is one of the most competitive fields there are in any sport. But what an incredible year for Devin. She set the tone for this from 2023, really. And she's been doing it for years since she came back from what was almost a career-ending back injury. Fought her way back. We mentioned that resilience earlier, and all of it came to fruition in 2024, setting the record twice. But now she stands alone at 7.65. What do we think about this year for Devin?
I mean, go ahead. Yeah, my thing is, when you said competitive fields, it seemed like the hurdles was the only event where everyone was just like, yeah, I'm gonna come, you know, run, I'm gonna jump, I'm gonna do whatever, or leap. Let's not get the terminology, run over the hurdle. Let's put it that way. But it was always like, you look at ranking, you know, top 10. It's not like some of these sprints where you're not getting the best of the best coming because it's like, oh, the event isn't big enough, or, you know, my season just doesn't allow it. Like, this is my downtime before I go into the World Championships. But hurdles seems like you get the cream of the crop every single race. And for that to be able to, let's put it this way, you're 1 millisecond away from not even qualifying to the final. Like, that's how on your game you have to be. The focus that you have to be able to run that event with those type of women you're running against, you have to be on your A game always.
Yeah, but no, for me, it's just her ability to just keep at it. We've seen her time from she was here at SAC. She's always been the quiet one in the back. But the last couple of years, it's just something in her, and I'll heed the term, you flip the switch. But something in her triggered, and she was like, I am good enough. I am capable of going on. Go ahead.
She started training at the University of Kentucky.
Oh, boy, here we go.
She got that dog in her.
So that's where the switch was flipped?
With Debbie?
I mean, I can only tell you the facts. Look, when we have an equation, how do you tell you how to solve it in math? You got to find what the variable is. And whatever that variable is probably the thing that changed the answer. That's all I'm saying.
Fair point. But no, I just have to tip my hat just to see her show up. Constantly show up and find a way to say, hey, I could do more. Find the right coaches, figuring out, hey, this is what I need to tweak. This is what I need to do better. And she found a way to get it done, and that it's super impressive.
And like, let's not forget that she comes back home all the time. She runs camps.
You wouldn't know that because I keep saying she's so quiet. She's so to herself. She's so reserved.
She started foundation.
So just to go back to recap the year, 7.67 February in New York at the Millrose Games. In March, World Indoor Championships, the 7.65, where she set the record. So that's twice in the same year. And what John alluded to, oh, we're skipping over the Olympics. Also made the Olympic final for the second consecutive games. Finished sixth in the Olympic final. But to get there, and before we get to her off the field or off the track exploits, which are amazing in their own right, but she was also the leader of... just this resurgence in the hurdles, because following behind her, you had Denisha Cartwright, you had Charisma Taylor. So we had three Bahamians qualify for the Olympics in the 100-meter hurdles, which was an amazing feat in itself. But I feel like so much of that has to be attributed to them seeing what Devin did on the biggest stage and saying, yeah, we could follow behind in those footsteps.
But let's also, if we're going to do that, Patricia Seymour. She made an Olympic final, and I know that they were... similar in years when it comes to college. It's just that Devin had injuries, which didn't allow it. But
they peaked at different times because of several circumstances.
But that helps, like you say, with the resurgence. That's just like with Jazz now. People in the baseball, Sabasco, and the people seeing VJ. This is what you need to be able to elevate your local culture of saying, I could make it and I can do it.
Yeah.
and putting her money where her mouth is, because like John mentioned, starting her foundation, Broken Barriers Foundation, trying to help underserved student athletes, because Devin wasn't one of the ones that needed help. She comes from structure. She comes from a sound background where she had access to all the resources she needed. Well, she's looking at the landscape and she gave voice to it herself, saying, when you look at the Carifta teams, it's made up of private school kids. What's the difference? It's not that they're better. They have access to all the clubs and all the resources. So she forms a foundation to help the ones probably in the public school system that have talent but don't have access to those resources. And she started the funding by putting $20,000 of her own money into it. So that in itself, I mean, you could almost get number one just by doing that, because we don't have athletes just doing that on a regular basis all the time in this country.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, we know DeAndre has his foundation, Buddy has his foundation. But to me, that's a little different than Devin, because track and field doesn't, I know they make money, but they're not making the money that Buddy and them, and they don't have the recognition. Because Buddy could go anywhere in the world. Trust me, I know, because I've been with Buddy in plenty of places. And he is recognized. Wait,
Walmart?
Yeah, man. Okay. All the time.
No, but I think Nal stated it perfectly when he's... When he said that $20,000 a month, people would look at that and be like, oh, $20,000, but to the point you just made, for somebody in track and field, for somebody that does not do this year round, that does not make the $1 million contracts, that's a big sacrifice to say, hey, I'm going to put this money in a space where we actually can challenge athletes, challenge the government, challenge corporate Bahamas to say, hey, put more in this sector, because if you see all these underserved kids, if we get them to develop, if we get them to this level, we can produce more top-tier talent.
And that's our number one. Devin Charlton, as your world record holder, can we spend the last 3 minutes on John Canoe?
I don't want to talk about it because, like, I'm very upset about this.
You do want to talk about it.
Okay, I'm very upset about this idea that the Saxons will now, I think the Bahamians are saying the phrase, the most winningest, or have you pronounced
it? No, they need to get one more. They tied Diwali now.
Oh, is this like the Lakers-Celtics?
Yes.
Yeah, they tied.
No, they're not tied. They're like...
So what are the roots?
No, they're not.
This is why I hate the way we keep records in this country. They are like three down. So they need to win, I think.
I don't believe you.
Three down from which rally?
They like three parades down. So if they win the next three parades, they're going to be tied with the Valley Boys.
You just told us that they don't take good records, and
yeah,
you just told
me to go check the records. No, what happened in the last 2 days, everybody is saying they're now tied with the Valley Boys. There's still a few back. If you talk to a real John Canoe historian, somebody need to get Vola Francis on the line. He'll tell you, Saxons are either now, either two or three down. I think it's three. Mm. When I was at the Tribune, I had to like look this up.
I'm going to say two.
It's three down. But everybody's saying...
Wait, they've won a lot since you were at the Tribune.
That is true.
But they've won at least three
since you were at the... stuck in there and find a way to stem the tide.
But think about it. Carter just gave himself away when he said he looked it up when he was at the Tribune. Saxons just won three in a row.
Yeah.
So if they were three down
then... No, they were three down then. What I'm saying is if you added what they've done in recent years, they would now be three down.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. So somebody please find Percy Vola Francis.
So, okay, is this going to be like expansion teams where because the Valley split, are people taking titles or are they just going to claim all the titles?
Nah. Whoever claims the name claims the history, and that's where all of this is such a big deal.
But this is so strange because we've seen groups splinter before and it hasn't been like this.
Not like this. When you
we have never seen a group split
and fight over the name.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
But see, that's not
but then change the name, but keep
because when the Saxons split and you got the groups like one family and all that, and it wasn't so much so, it was like divisions in the group. So if you look at what John Canoe is, you have people from different neighborhoods in the same area that come together to form one big group. When one family split, it was like, yeah, all right, if y'all want to be up there on top of the hill and basically say y'all is the Saxons, by all means, we'll stay down here because they literally two blocks down from the Saxons and we'll just do our own thing.
But even the Valley had it happen before with Roots.
The Roots, Prodigal Sons, all of these groups stem from there. That's why I said this was a bit different because what it was, it was like the senior command saying, hey, y'all just leading wrong. Let's do something different. And then the senior command saying, yeah, no, that would be interested in. All
look, right. I'll go back to my, I don't know if Nal could take this victory with the Saxons because he was pacing for there the Valley Boys.
Anyway, that'll do it. That was 2024. I was helping my nephew, still a Saxon at heart. This has been 10YS. We'll see y'all in 2025.